It's time now for the Todd Leonard Show. Leave those negative stories behind as we focus on the positive and hear from those who give back and help others. Let's start your day with some inspirational stories. Now, here's your host, Todd Leonard.
Good morning. Thank you so much for tuning in today. We have a wonderful show. We're very honored to have Judy Peterson, who came in from Florida to visit with us today to talk about our wonderful cause, Hearts of Hope. In preparation, I was just really astonished by her devotion to helping others in need, really throughout our great country. And like I said, I think we're in for a wonderful show. Good morning, Judy. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Todd. It is a pleasure to be here.
And I know that, you know, you came in from Florida. It means so much that you're able to find time to join us. So, you know, I know we were talking a little bit before we were honored to start the show, and I was just really so impressed with everything you've done with Hearts of Hope. What I'd like to do, though, Judy, before we talk about your wonderful cause of helping others with broken hearts and mending the communities, is a little bit about you, because I think it helps our listeners understand kind of where you were before you got involved and kind of where we are today. So where you live in Florida now?
Yes, we're living in Punta Gorda, Florida. It's right north of Fort Myers.
Wonderful. Well, a lot of us are jealous, but it's been pretty mild this winter.
It's been pretty nice here, too, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has indeed. So let me, if I may, let's talk a little bit about your professional background. Do you have a degree in anything?
I have a master's of social work, and I have a... I have an advanced certification in thanatology, which is the study of end-of-life grief, loss, and bereavement.
And if I may, because obviously the subject everybody goes through in life, you know, that you lose a loved one, why did you find, you know, that interest in helping families, certainly near the end of the lives of their loved ones? Was there some reason why you've got involved in that?
Well, I guess it's a, I guess it was an aha moment. I had a loss that occurred for me. And it was sudden, unexpected. My husband of 15 years died suddenly. And I went through the grief process. And in fact, I think we all do throughout the course of our lives. But I know this one in particular, I was not prepared for. I was young. And it was eye-opening in, the reactions of other people and eye-opening in the way that I reacted to other people and the world. And it just kind of evolved where, okay, now this loss is part of my life. And while I went back to work, at the time I was working in the corporate world, I went back to my life and my friends, and I can't say how much support I received. But it wasn't until 4 years later, and by that time I had a couple of years following my late husband's death, I met someone and we married, and in fact it's a happily ever after story, and we were relocated to upstate New York. So in upstate New York, I was finding that there weren't a whole lot of jobs in my field, and the opportunities were kind of limited, and I did some things that were fun and adventurous. And it wasn't until one day that I opened the newspaper and I saw a little two-line ad that said, "Hospice volunteer wanted. Call this number." And that was the aha moment. That was the moment when everything pivoted to where it has evolved to today. And while I didn't have the vision of Hearts of Hope as it exists today, I had the vision and I had the instantaneous drive that working in end of life and working with people who were experiencing, families experiencing grief and loss, I was going to do that. And that's kind of how it went.
Well, I'm sorry about the loss of your first husband. It sounds like you lost a wonderful person, but you obviously, despite that tremendous adversity through just being a special person, found a new love, got married, and found that aha moment in your life. And a lot of folks go through life wondering when they might find something, why I'm actually on this planet, because many of us go through life and we're not sure which way is up, and then all of a sudden we get an epiphany. The hospice work, you know, I share with you, I lost my beloved dad, and he battled pancreatic cancer, and we had hospice at the house, and they're angels, I mean, the folks that do that. But I know how painful that is for the family as they watch their loved one go through the last few days of their lives, and it's really, I still remember it like it was yesterday, but that's life. You live and love, and you lose, and you do your best. The hospice work, how challenging was it?
Well, I can tell you that to a person, just about to a person, people have said, hospice work is so hard. I don't know how you people do it. a lot of people think of us as angels. Well, I don't know if I agree with that per se, but I like the compliment. I think that you're called to it. And I think that whenever anyone is working in many, many of the human service fields, I think you're driven to it. I didn't have my master's in social work at the time, but it was when I started doing hospice volunteering that I realized this is what I want to do. So as a mature student, I realized that everyone was driven to help because of a personal experience. So it's not uncommon. And so working with all of these families and the environment itself was more enriching than it was hard. And I will say there were a couple of families that as I met them and I got to know them, you know, we're all kind of trained and we're all hopefully doing, you know, the very best job we can with, you know, just going in and meeting families where they are. And we do. But there are some families that touch you in ways that are just a little bit more deeply touched than others. And I think it was those families that led me to not only work with families facing end of life, but that drove me directly into the field of grief and loss, because I thought, okay, our patients, you know, they're so courageous and they're so inspiring. And then I watched these families in bereavement and I thought, oh my gosh, how are they coping with all of this? And who's supporting them? And what is their family system like? And so it was just kind of the culmination of my personal experience with then my professional experience. I ended up with this particular hospice. I ended up being the person that oversaw all of the bereavement services. And I learned a whole lot through that. And so I learned that people, when they're given the opportunities, they'll talk about things. They'll reach out for help. A lot of times, they don't even know help's out there. And so that's kind of how the hospice experience led to what ultimately became Hearts of Hope.
Right, and once again, I mean, everybody goes through life's journeys, and it was, you know, obviously critically important for you to be there for the families, and as a hospice worker, and really find an opportunity to find, you know, really what you were all about was helping others, certainly in need. So how did the Hearts of Hope start? You know, obviously that's the focus of the show, and I wanted the listeners to understand a little bit more of the backstory.
Sure.
About who you were and kind of how that started. But the Hearts of Hope, so did you wake up one morning and say, you know, I really want to do this, or was it a culmination of things?
It was a culmination of things. Well, and then from that point forward, it was everything. I'd wake up every day and say, yeah, I really want to do this. But what occurred during my hospice days was that I found that people would reach out more for services that included groups. So one-on-one, I found that people would visit me and you know, they seemed to find benefit from that. But it wasn't a very large percentage of people. So when I ran support groups, there were more people. And I thought, people are comfortable with this. They like this. They find comfort in numbers and strength in numbers. I ran the memorial services. More people came. And I ran, you know, I did that throughout the course of every year. I met an art therapist during that time, and I met an artist during that time. And they said to me, you know, you're loving these support groups, and you're loving the results that you're seeing with people benefiting from them. Have you ever thought about bringing an art component into your groups? And I hadn't. In fact, I had thought that maybe bringing art into the group would be portraying it as art therapy, which it really wasn't. It was an aid to the therapeutic benefit of the group itself. And it worked. And so when I would think that, okay, this group is going great, and they used to try to measure, okay, week one, everybody's kind of awkward. Week two, people getting more comfortable. Week three, people were really getting comfortable with each other. And I was so pleased to see that, because that was kind of how I'd measure. I would always think, oh, good, week three, this group's doing great. It wasn't until I brought art in, and what I did, I thought, okay, what's easy? And I knew that I couldn't bring in easels and paints and that type of thing. But these two of my colleagues said, why don't you bring in clay? And that's exactly what we did. And when we brought that lump of clay in, and people would just kind of grab it and work, you know, with their hands, something very magical occurred in the group. It was as though the intimacy level of the group ratcheted up so fast and so thoroughly, because now people were working with their hands, and it kind of freed their minds to communicate and to share. And it was kind of extraordinary. And that continued. So it wasn't only the first couple of groups. It was all of them. During that time, during those hospice days and those groups was when 9/11 occurred. And as a nation, and very possibly as a world, we were so stunned and so shocked and so thoroughly grief-stricken that everybody wanted to do something to help. And it was then, at that event, that Hearts of Hope, in the format that it is today, was kind of born. Because what I went then, at that time, we were all kind of scratching our heads saying, I gotta do something. What can I do? There's nothing to do. And I came up with the thought of, what if we did art, but make it even more accessible than clay that you would just sit there and mold? And so my thought was, okay, if we make a finished and fired piece, that's easy. And said to people, you want to paint this heart as a gift for someone else? And that was pretty straightforward and pretty easy. And then I had the thought of, well, I don't just want to do that. I want them to know a little bit about the person that this gift is coming from. Well, I went to my director, and she said, well, her words almost exactly were, if you can fund it, you can do it. Sure enough, that's what happened. It was not that difficult to get funding. We, it was 9/11. We had a lot of people interested in this initiative. We opened up our whole hospital auditorium from 1 to 4. We made we had people all over the place making these little ceramic hearts. There was even one group that the art therapist was having her clientele take lumps of clay, roll them out with rolling pins, and cut out the shapes with a little paring knife. And so these little hearts came in all, kind of shapes, but they were all ones that people painted. And in one afternoon, in this hospital in upstate New York, 700 people turned up. And I think it follows the logic that I had already seen with group dynamics, that everybody wants to help, everybody wants to do something. Sometimes the access point's not really known, and this was it.
So if I may, Judy, and it's a wonderful story how you started Hearts of Hope, really in the immediate aftermath of the tragedy, national tragedy of 9/11, but it sounds like you certainly already built the infrastructure with the concept of using clay and bringing people together to try to heal. In terms of the organization Hearts of Hope, for the listeners, we have a very, very nice community of folks that do want to give back. How would they reach you and donate or find out more how they can help?
I would love to. I would love to connect with anyone who might want to participate in any way. And I can give you our website address. It is ourheartsofhope.org. And our phone number is 973-224-6900. And folks can connect to volunteer with us. We would love that. They can connect if they would like to host a Hearts of Hope event with their family or their friends or their community. There's lots of ways. So hopefully between those two pieces of information, they can get in touch with us and we'll take it from there.
Wonderful. Like I said, the listeners are really, really outstanding people. The idea of the Hearts of Hope and making these clay images and molding and getting that personal connection. I love the name Hearts of Hope, because I know when people go through disasters and tragedies, the heart gets them through. Even though it's broken, it's going to hopefully mend. How'd you come up with the name Hearts of Hope?
It just seemed like the right name. We, when we realized the success of of the shape. And yes, there's nothing like a heart to touch everyone's heart. And I thought that, as we delivered these to Lower Manhattan after the first event we had, it brought hope. And so I don't know if you remember, but there was a temporary counseling center set up at the first fire station that responded right down in, right down closest to the World Trade Center. And it was palpable. When we handed these to people, they looked at them, and first they were a little bit shocked, like, who is this stranger handing me a gift? But then they were, they opened up the little gift bag, and they read the card, and they looked at the hand painting, and, we don't require anybody to be an artist. And so, the designs are all unique, and they're all kind of rustic in a lot of cases, and sometimes they're really fine art. But I thought, this little outreach follows everything that I've seen throughout all my years of doing this work, that this little piece, this effort that one person made from one person's heart to another is giving them hope. So the name just became easy.
It's an incredible, you know, story how you started it. For the listeners, you know, we've had on in the past the D'Amico family, you know, wonderful folks, lost their beloved son in a tragic accident in 2015. And they started the Kindness for Christopher movement, wonderful people. And it's the idea they would, there would be rocks with like kind messages and the idea of being kind to others and how it lifted up a community, lifted them up as well. We were talking even before we started the show today about Billy Cook and his extremely proud mom, Felice Cook, with Billy's baseballs. And ironically, I'm telling you about the messages of, as a 12-year-old, Billy came up with the idea of writing messages on baseballs and giving them to the troops. And you actually said, I know the Cooks.
I know the Cooks.
You know some really great people.
They are.
But that when they talked about their idea, I'm like, what's more personal? It really shows you care.
Yes.
Now, going back to the tragedy in you know, 9/11, the country was reeling. People were really confused. They didn't know which way was up. How could a great country like ours be attacked in such a way? And it really shook, I think, the country to the core. And there's a lot of grief, a lot of heartache, and the images of 9/11 are here in everybody's collective memory about what that was like. That looked like hell. And to find out that you and members of the Hearts of Hope went there to lend a hand, to give comfort, to give out these beautiful hearts, it says a lot about you and about the organization and what was needed. You talked about when you walked in, it was like a palpable feeling. And Hearts of Hope, isn't that what it's about, is going in, unfortunately, these very, very sad situations, trying to lift up the spirits. And when I was thinking about you coming on today, that's what the show's about, is lifting up spirits, giving people hope if people down or they need a hand up, and about focusing on wonderful things that people do to help others in need. Because we know in life things can happen, and you need people around you that really do give back. That's why I felt so honored for you to join us. So when you were there and you felt the sorrow but also giving out the hearts, did something kind of resonate with you in terms of what you could really deliver to the public?
It resonated, yes, and I would say the entire experience, because we started planning this immediately following 9/11. And it began to resonate when I saw, you know, when my director gave me that challenge, I thought, oh, I wonder if I can do this. And then, you know, it continued to resonate as people were stepping forward just by word of mouth. And that was pretty incredible. And then when I listened to some of the conversations, so that one afternoon, that 1 p.m. to 4 p.m., I walked around. I was, you know, coordinating together with a bunch of other volunteers. And we were listening, I especially was listening to the stories of the people doing this. And so I had this amazing feeling of what it meant to the folks in the room that were doing this for someone else. And so it brought it all full circle when we got to the fire station in Lower Manhattan. It brought it all full circle because I thought, this really is a circle. This is a circle of hope. That one person who is looking for hope is receiving it, and another person, you know, wherever, whatever their circumstances have been, they're offering it. And that's what resonated, was that hope is, you know, seems so hopelessly intangible, but can actually be a real thing that you can kind of plan for. And so what has happened since? And I can tell you, we've never advertised. We've delivered more than 125,000 of these worldwide so far. We've never advertised because one person will receive it. They will feel the hope that comes from it, and they will recognize the effort that went into it. And then they want to do that for somebody else. And very, very often, the people who are thinking, I want to do this for somebody else, they've been there. Something's happened. And they have that empathy. They have that feeling of, this was a terrible thing when this occurred. I want to do this for somebody else. So right after 9/11, we had interest.
Yeah, so if I may, so we've had other guests on that really stepped up after the tragedies, and I have a really close friend of mine, Dr. Goldstein, Raiden Randolph, and he's been, you know, after the tragedy, helped identify remains through dental records, which was a horrendous task, but something that needed to be done.
Yes.
I've had Gary Lynch, a firefighter from Mendenborough, who does runs to honor 9/11 folks. I had my really dear friend Bill Lockwood on, who, you know, was working for a company to help with basically trucks and other needed supplies. So just a lot of people stepped up after that tragedy. I don't want the listeners to lose sight of what you just spoke about, though, Judy. Your organization has sent out 125,000 hearts. That's a lot of hearts. And you touch people in so many different ways. And that's beautiful that you've been able to do that, because going through what your organization has been involved in is quite an eye-opener. Before we started the show, you were kind. A lot of the guests lately, I guess it's really nice. They give me pamphlets, buttons. You know, we had some wonderful people on, and it's really nice. But I was going through your pamphlet about Hearts of Hope, and hope makes the world go round. It's a beautiful little ceramic heart, you know, and then it talked about a number of really important things, compassion, creating hope one heart at a time, and hope and empowerment. And what's more important than really lending a hand up and giving someone hope is going through some tremendous adversities. Now, one of the things I also recognize is the access point. How do you get folks involved, and how do you do what you're doing, right? So can you talk a little bit more about the concept of access points?
Mm-hmm. I'd love to. It was this particular, you know, how this, what this actually means was brought home to me by an artist that I have subsequently met in Connecticut. And this person said, a lot of people don't belong to a faith community. A lot of people don't join community groups. And a lot of people, you know, who are working so many hours, this is not happening in their workplace. And so, what, you know, his description to me was being able to do this, because this activity can take an hour. It can take weeks to coordinate. But for the most part, this is something that someone can come in and create hope for someone else in less than an hour. And that's an access point, because it's manageable, it's doable, it's enjoyable, and it makes you feel so good that you can accomplish something that means so much.
Well, that's, I mean, you, like you just were talking about, you've accomplished 125,000 hearts given out is really an incredible thing, and you've been involved since the tragedy of 9/11. One of the things that I was thinking about also is how many people is the organization reaching through this wonderful cause? And I bring up the D'Amico family again, and Chris talked about the ripple effect, where if you do something for one person, you don't know how that might impact not only that person but others, right. And then it kind of just has a ripple effect where, you know, I was just talking about, like, the cooks, and you know the cooks, and now I know the cooks, and I met you, and I'm meeting other folks, and you can't imagine how everybody's lives end up becoming more intertwined. But how many people do you think you've reached through the organization?
Yes, we measure it. In fact, we touch 10 lives before we even hand the gift over to a person. So we know we have touched and impacted more than a million lives. And we, from the ripple effect, we know that there is a number on top of that, 10 per, that is unknown, because we get so many referrals, it's hard to measure that.
Well, once again, I mean, if you're reaching so many people, it's only doing good. It's lifting up the communities, and it's really making the world a much better place. I wanted to take a very short break. We're going to be back in 30 seconds. And we'll be right back and follow through with some incredible stories.
The Todd Leonard Show is sponsored by the Leonard Foundation, whose mission is to support the children and families who are battling pediatric cancer and those in need of food and assistance, women's shelters, and other important social services in the community. They also proudly support those fighting pancreatic cancer. They feel it's vitally important to help those in need in our amazing community when they need us the most. Please join them in extending a helping hand and go to LeonardCharity.org and donate now. Together, we can touch many lives.
Welcome back. We're once again honored to have Judith Peterson here, founder of Hearts of Hope back in 2001, and really going over with this how her beautiful organization, through just making hearts and giving them out, is changing the world. And it's just a humbling experience to be with someone like Judy today, who really epitomizes helping others in need. Judy, I wanted to talk, just for all of us to understand, the type of situations your organization goes to. When folks would stay away from it, you guys go right into it, and it's really remarkable. In, you know, preparing, I understand after the horrible Sandy Hook school shootings in Newtown, Connecticut, your organization stepped up and went into the community. Am I right?
Yes, that's right. And I can tell you that since 9/11, we've responded to most national tragedies, but there have been some that have been so so vast in terms of you know, reach and how many people were impacted that we have gone and it has been to schools. So the Sandy Hook shooting that occurred in 2012, I can tell you that occurred on December 14th of 2012. On December 15th. Our phones started to ring, and it did not stop. People all over the country were calling and saying, I want to help, I want to help, I want to help. And they did, by the thousands. And so I can tell you, backing up a tiny bit, about how we operate when something like this occurs. In my experience as a grief counselor, I have come to realize, and this is, you know, this is within now. Anyone who works with people who are grieving know that you don't just rush in. You're much more thoughtful than that. And so every time that we've ever, especially in large quantities like the Sandy Hook shooting, in any response like that, they know we're coming. So we go to the effort of saying there are people that want to help, and here's what we wish to do. Is it okay with you if we do? And I only bring this up because it's important. I think it is important to mention this. When we went to Sandy Hook, we did have permission. We had the mayor meeting us, and we had so many people that were there to meet us. And what drove the point home to me that you don't just show up is looking at the streets within this small town 2 months later. There were still teddy bears all over the place. There were still... You know, people came to that town. It's a fairly small community, and there was so much volume of stuff that people just delivered, hand delivered, had shipped. And I remember I got a tour, because all of this stuff, it's impossible to describe it all, but quilts and stuffed animals and just tons of things were delivered to that community. It was already overwhelming enough to have that tragedy occur, but then to have to deal with, it was December. And so, you know, a gazillion teddy bears, and then it snowed. And so what do you do? And, you know, so we, you know, in our model, they know we're coming. They know we're going to distribute this. They are welcoming to us. And so in the 2 months that it took for us to arrive, they did. And there was, you know, it was so challenging in the town itself that it took us a while to actually make it a meaningful connection. So we got to go, and we had volunteers meet us, and we gave them kind of batches of these wonderful gifts, and they went off, and they delivered them. They were hanging from trees and mailboxes and the police station, and you name it. There were little hearts of hope all over the place.
Yeah, I read you in preparation, you delivered over 2,500 of these beautiful
yes.
treasures to a community that was reeling. I mean, it was a heartache.
Yes.
And
same thing occurred, you know, to follow the schools that we have
right.
visited. The Marjorie Stoneman Douglas School was another thing that had an impact similar to that. And so we, you know, people were calling us, and we were creating these gifts for them. And we made sure that on the day that we showed up, they knew we were coming, and they welcomed us. And, you know, so it was heartwarming for us to be welcome, but it was also, it gave them some notice. You know, it said, okay, this group wants to be here. You get a chance to vet them first. And so that's kind of the way we do it. And so our response has been to many, many of these national tragedies, but we also respond one by one to, you know, if one of our volunteers says, can I create hope and make one of these gifts for somebody else? We'll say, of course you can. And we deliver to hospitals and cancer centers and the military, first responders. And where the need presents itself, we go.
So, you know, what's really fascinating is your background in terms of being in hospice, and then able to use that tremendous knowledge in your own heart to develop and find and found hearts of hope and be there in these tragedies, both big and small. Because if you lose a loved one, that's a tragedy. And if it's in a mass setting, sadly, which is way too many of them, it's mind-boggling to me that the world we live in has all these mass events where just innocent people are slaughtered. But you're there to step up and be there for the community and help the community heal. I understand after the incredible things that you did in Newtown, Connecticut, a very strong community, but a community shaken, that a chapter sprung up.
Our very first one.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what was that like to find a community that just lost their precious treasures, their kids, and that popped up?
Mm-hmm. It was extraordinary. And, we delivered so many at one time that, you know, it followed what our model is anyway, because people want to pay it forward. But this community, you know, this was the access point. And so this community said, wow, all these people did this for us. We want to do the same thing for other communities. And so they did. And so we brought all these wonderful hearts of hope in February. By March, one of the people that had met me that day already had a venue, already had a group, already had everything you can think of. And so she coordinated it and we did it. And so the first time they all met was in April of 2013. And just by, you know, uncanny coincidence, it was in response to the Boston Marathon bombing. And so this community, who was reeling in grief, just months later created another 1,500 of these. And they formed, including me and myself and another Hearts of Hope representative, they got volunteers from Newtown who drove these up into Boston. Again, we met the mayor. We all congregated in Copley Square and handed out these beautiful gifts from one grieving community to another.
So one of the things, like I just touched on, is you're really walking right into the most difficult, challenging times for a community in terms of just the loss of life and the confusion, the heartache, the pain, the anger, you name it. But you're there to really be there and to comfort those in need, and which is really remarkable. For those listening, Judy, once again, how would they reach out to your beautiful organization, which is just doing wonderful things?
Sure, I would love them to visit us at ourheartsofhope.org, or our phone number is 973-224-6900.
So I brought up a little bit earlier, creating hope one heart at a time. The messages are really powerful, I mean, to say the least, but I love that too. Besides the name Hearts of Hope, we had Diane Grossman on. She had lost her beloved daughter, Mallory, to bullying. And it was only 12, and she started Mallory's Army. And I'm like, that's a mother that's really created an army and support to battle bullying. It was a really very, very emotional show. And the SF6, remembering TJ, they lost their son to suicide, sadly, in Montville. Wonderful people. And last week, you know, with Vicki Duffy, Elena Wood, talking about their personal stories and launching point and just really wonderful people. But I love some of these messages, which is creating hope one heart at a time, because people I really admire, people have a big heart, and you know, even though it could be broken, it's going to mend and they help others in need. How'd you come up with this concept, hope one heart at a time?
Because that's exactly what it is. And so when you look at the numbers, there are big numbers, and we know we've touched more than 1 million people, and we continue to have these big numbers continuing to grow. But when you dial it back to its very core, there's one human heart creating hope for another. And they're doing this because it feels like the right thing to do. And so even though you can say, oh, these numbers are so big, and they are, and we are, you know, astounded by them half of the time, but when you dial it back, it's one person sitting at a little clay heart that they can create as a gift, and then they make the heart first. Then they sit with their message card, and they say, here's my first name. My first name is Judy, and I live in Punta Gorda, Florida. And then there's a line on that card. It's the message card is printed, but they fill in the blanks. The next line says, a little bit more about me. And so for me, I would put, I love dogs, and I love to sing. And then the last line is their personal message that starts off with, my message of caring is. And I can tell you that we've done this with corporations, and we've done this with schools, and in small groups. When you lay all those hearts and all those messages out, you cannot believe the impact as just a person looking at it. So maybe you didn't even make one. Maybe you didn't even write out a card. But just to get that glimpse into the heart of the person that created that, and then to know, because lately, even the last several years, we have encouraged people to, if they have a purpose and a cause that they want to support, we'll help them make that delivery in person. And so that particular painter or, you know, representative from that group has the opportunity to go see firsthand the impact that has when they hand their heart from their heart to the heart of another person.
Right, and that's a beautiful thing, to give your heart freely and try to help others in need is really what it's all about in life. You know, Judy was asking me why I got involved in doing these shows Sunday mornings, because I love to help people. I love the community. I want to put the spotlight on people like Judy that are truly giving back and making the world a better place. Judy, I wanted to touch a little bit, because I know you mentioned Florida, but I want to talk about your New Jersey roots, too, with this wonderful organization, since we're right here in Morris County, New Jersey. What's the involvement with New Jersey for Hearts of Hope?
Well, I can tell you that I, in my heart of hearts, I do consider myself a Jersey girl, because my husband's work brought us here, and we spent 9 years here. And I have never met, well, for one thing, I never lived in such a big community, but the other is I've never met such an enormous community where so many people want to give back. And it was there that I had left upstate New York and come here. And with my husband's encouragement, he said, why don't you start that organization that you've talked about? I was actually working with the group in upstate New York to do this up there. It never had really occurred to me to do it independently, but when I did a little bit of research, sure enough, it was something that I could do. And with the help of a whole bunch of people, we incorporated here. And so that was in 2005 that with the passion and all these amazing people, we started to create hope exponentially so much more. And so, you know, whenever I get back here, which is as often as I can get back here, I feel kind of a Jersey roots. And I see, you know, this is North Jersey in particular is where the bulk of our interest is. So while we've got interest all over the country, there is so much happening here that started way back when and continues today.
Right. I also know that there was an event in Sparta.
Oh, my word, yes.
Where you were involved with the Girl Scouts.
Yes.
What was that about?
Oh, my word, that was so great. That is one amazing woman who has been a troop leader for years, and her troop decided to bring Hearts of Hope as an activity to their Girl Scouts. This was 8 years ago, and in that time, they started relatively small, although the woman who's been coordinating this is a big thinker, so the numbers were always kind of, these groups were huge. But in 8 years, they created hope for, oh my gosh, 8,000 people.
That's wonderful.
It's amazing.
That's amazing. I'm right here in Sparta, too.
It's amazing.
And you know what I love about it is it's the young kids, in this case Girl Scouts, who are getting exposed to the idea of being compassionate and giving hope and to have a hands-on experience, because there's a hands-on. I mean, if you're making hearts or you're drawing on hearts, it's hands-on. You also said something. She's a big thinker. I like people that are big thinkers. You're a big thinker, too. I mean, you started out in 2001, and have you already been involved and instrumental in giving out over 125,000 hearts, as well as touching over a million lives? I mean, that's just an incredible thing. In terms of, you know, everybody who's like you, they just do their thing. They're not for the accolades, the pats on the back. and say, wow, how wonderful I am. You do it because you think it's the right thing to do. Did you ever see this when you started in 2001? Now you're, it's 2020. You're on the Todd Leonard Show. You probably never thought that was going to happen.
Never.
But, and I'm honored that you're on it.
I am too.
And I have to say, I never thought I'd have a radio show, 4.5 months ago, but it is something in my head that I wanted to do. But in terms of all the lives you've touched, what is that like to look back now? It's almost 20 years, 2 decades.
Right.
It's a lot of commitment, a lot of time. You ever see that coming?
Never. Never. I can say that, you know, day to day, we, as all of us, you know, we do what we do. You know, we are not looking for accolades. We're not looking for pats on the back. We just get up and have, you know, start our happy day and we do what we do. But I can tell you that if, you know, in the moments that I think about it and I think about the number, you know, the sheer number of lives that have been touched, it's almost never that an individual has that opportunity or, you know, seldom. And I think overall, I just feel this sense of, just to put it plainly, I feel lucky. I feel lucky that people listen to my story and then decided to share their stories. And I feel grateful that there were others that said, wait a minute, I think I can help with this. And then they did. And then I feel lucky to hear from people that have received some of the gifts when they say, this changed my life. And you think, oh my goodness, this is just a simple little gift. But when you think about the meaning behind it and the impact that it had every time that heart of hope was touched, that's where it becomes, for me, very humbling.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, what you've been able to do, you put yourself right out there, you're opened up and shared. The last 3 weeks of the show have been very emotional, painful, but it had to be told is the sad situation with teen suicide. It breaks my heart. I'm still trying to get my hands around what's going on, but sadly, this is just the world we live in. And I've had people that were willing to share their stories and to be open and real. I don't like people that are fake. Just tell me the way it is. You know, we've had people, and the more I'm learning about it, because people that give their heart and open up, people can relate to it. Mm-hmm. You lost, sadly, your first husband, and you went through horrible grief. You were involved in hospice. You understand the fragility of life, but you've been able to take all of that experience and make the world a better place. I wanted to touch on, too, because I try to do the shows also, hopefully, to maybe inspire people to do what they think is important and make the world better, is the people you come in contact with, the volunteers. You know, if I may, I've been involved in Special Olympics over 20 years. I met some incredible people. I mean, just remarkable. And the parents, the athletes, I mean, it's unbelievable, the experience. I joined the 200 Club, and people just doing the right thing, helping out. Right. And I wanted to touch on that because I realize you go a lot to these tragedies, and you also have a team of folks and volunteers. What's it like to be able to be around the kind of special people that are volunteers?
Oh, the volunteers are extraordinary. You know, we get people that truly do work from their hearts. They're so creative. They're spontaneous in the ideas they come up with and the things they try. I can give you some examples by talking about our chapter of presidents, because we've got several chapters now. And, you know, these are, you know, when we form a chapter somewhere, it's because they heard about a chapter somewhere else. And I told you that our chapter in Newtown was the first one. The people that decided to be part of, you know, they had volunteers or the leadership volunteers as part of that chapter. Well, we know what they went through. And so, you know, yet they thought, we're doing this. Not only are we going to do it, we're going to reach a lot of people. And they bring not a sense of sorrow to the exercise, but a sense of joy and a sense of, we can really do this. We really can create hope. We really can change lives. And I think it's that kind of energy that each, you know, you don't have to be a chapter leader or in the leadership, you know, among our leadership volunteers. You can be anybody. And I think that when you ask about what kind of impact it has had, I see that in every one of our volunteers. So, yes, we have responded to all of these horrific tragedies, but we have also responded to groups of first responders to say thank you for being the people that are walking in today. This tragedy occurred today. You walk in today. And that, you know, they are truly special people. So just to say thank you, we'll do that too. And it's driven by our volunteers who say, I just heard of a fire chief in Maine that died in a fire. So he was in the line of duty. Can we drive our leadership from our chapters up there and bring them hope? That's exactly what they did. They did that last October. And so, there is this sense that we're responding to things that are so horrific. But there's also this joy that I think to a person we all feel that we can do this. And so I would say to anybody thinking about, you know, where is your passion? Where is your heart? See where it takes you. You know, try a couple of things. If it works, well, that's awesome. Even if it doesn't work, try a couple more things.
Right. I mean, people, whatever turns you on, I mean, you know, you found your passion in helping folks overcome grief and heartache, and you're doing just an incredible, really doing God's work. You talked about the first responders. You know, I just hold them in the highest regard, being a part of the 200 Club in Morris County. Seeing firsthand what they do every day, any minute, to help us all is really just incredible. Also, the toll it takes on them and their families. You can't lose sight of that. And I think that's certainly, you're spot on with recognizing their dedication to all of us. I wanted to also touch on, because, you know, this is a full-time job for you, right, Judy?
Yes.
Yeah. So I can imagine you're all over the place. You got a marriage, you got commitments, you got other things going on. The balance. I mean, how do you find the balance? I always think to the Karate Kid with Miyagi, you know, where you got it like Danielson, you got to find balance in your life. But,
yes.
You know, you got to find the time for yourself and for your husband. But you're also so passionate about the Hearts of Hope. So how do you do the balance?
Well, I can tell you that I Hearts of Hope is on my mind pretty much 24/7. But the things that I do to, and because that's my choice, you know, it's the thing that I thoroughly love. And I can also say that my family, there's me being lucky again. They fully support it, and most of them are involved with this. But things that I find outside of the day-to-day actual Hearts of Hope-related activities that I love, I'm so lucky. The sun comes out every day pretty much where I live. And so I'm outside all the time. I love getting out and walking the dogs or jogging. I love reading. You know, there are so many things that can come into your world that enrich it. And if you're lucky enough to have a family, and in my case, I have not only my entire family, but my amazing spouse that embraces the lifestyle. And so when we travel, which we love to do, we bring Hearts of Hope with us. And it just kind of enriches the experience. And so it's not that we look to find a balance. It's that the balance is just the lifestyle.
So it sounds to me like the Hearts of Hope, you know, your family's fully behind it, very supportive. You know, it sounds to me like you just have a wonderful family, not just your immediate family, but the family of Hearts of Hope.
That's exactly
because I'm
right.
Sure you have a very close kinship because of what you're doing, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's wonderful, yes, to have that experience. You know, I just go back to my own personal experience with some of these organizations. When you put the time and you get to meet these wonderful people, they feel like family, and they're wonderful.
Yes.
They're wonderful friends because you kind of see the goodness in people. And despite these very, very difficult, adverse situations you're going into, one of the things that was striking to me was it's still uplifting. You're going in, but you're lifting the community up through heartache and grief.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was thinking about the show today, I'm like, wow, this is going to be another serious, heavy show after 3 weeks of talking about teen suicide and everything else. I mean, and people hurting themselves and such personal issues. But your story is a beautiful story of giving people hope in the darkest moment of
yes.
their lives. And that's really uplifting to be able to be there because, you know, once again, people have to know you care, right? Because people are alone, they're scared, their life's turned upside down, and there you are giving out your hearts. And people are going to say, listen,
right,
if nothing else, they're trying because grief is different for everyone, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And it is like an extended family. We're a family of a lot of laughter, a lot of happiness, a lot of joy. And it was told to me this morning, I was meeting with one of our board members, and who's like a family. In fact, I stayed with his family last night, and the same last week, another one of our board members who's forming a chapter in South Carolina. I stayed with her family last week. And that is, I think, if there is any takeaway message in what this program is all about, I would say that these horrific things, we cannot avoid them. Loss will happen. Tornadoes will happen. Bad things. You know, it doesn't have to be defined. It's how the individual defines it. But I truly believe that if you experience that hope can come to you, you can give it to other people. And we're a group of nonstop people that just want to keep doing this and creating hope for other people.
That's wonderful. I mean, giving hope is what's more important than that. Before we conclude this remarkable and wonderful show and hearing about who you are, which is, once again, it's an honor and privilege, just tell us briefly, what's the current needs of your Hearts of Hope organization?
Yes, that's a great question. I think that we're always looking for individuals that want to do this with us, and that can be in the form of any type of volunteering. Bring us into your workplace. Talk to your wellness officers in your workplace and tell them this is an extraordinary team-building exercise. I've been into corporations where a couple of hundred hearts were created at one time, and they laid everything out in a gallery, and the notes are spectacular and wonderful, and people are touched just by seeing what their coworkers write. So bring us into your workplace, bring us into your house of worship, bring us into your family.
Well, once again, I mean, what you're talking about is critically important, which is not only uplifting in terms of people that need it, but also the team building and showing the world that people do truly care. The show, the underpinning again is a lot of people care. Everybody focuses on negativity or everything else that they find is the worst in people when there's so many beautiful people like you out there, Judy. I don't know how you even found the Todd Leonard Show. I was asking about Roberta Ginsburg. I don't know her, but I'm glad she did, because you're a wonderful lady. You're a special lady. You're a beautiful lady inside and out. For the listeners, anybody that knows someone like a Judy Peterson, not only do we need more Judys out there in the world, but, you know, contact my office. I'd love to have you on at 973-920-7900. Love to hear from you. You know, these shows are uplifting for me because it gives me a chance to bring beautiful people on and really hopefully enrich the community. You know, Judy embodies what's out there, embodies the idea you take your God-given gift, in this case Judy's gift, to help others through bereavement, through grief, through heartache, take her own personal tragedy and make it real for folks to know that they can open up and it's going to get better, because what Judy's been able to do has been truly remarkable. Next coming Sunday, I have my dear friend on, Mike Donowick. He's another spectacular person. Michael's the kind of guy, you're going to love him when you hear what he has to say. I've been coaching Special Olympics with him for many years. He's a wonderful coach, great guy. He's got handsome sons that also volunteer. He also is involved with kids with disabilities with the Night to Shine, that Tim Tebow movement, and it's a wonderful thing. And we're going to explore with Mike the genesis of his humanity as well. So next Sunday, I really hope you tune in. I wish you the very best of the rest of this weekend. God bless you, and enjoy the rest of the weekend.